Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
Here we are, Jaguars Thursday from the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We're here for the next hour. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli. Lots to get to tonight. We'll go through the Jags injury report, getting ready for the Washington Redskins on Sunday at FedEx Field. We'll talk about those Redskins, too. Not necessarily the best of starts in Houston, what to expect this Sunday. And a little on the Ray Rice situation. Jags owner Shad Khan released a statement today via the team's website. We'll go over that as well. And speaking of that, the Ravens play tonight, too. All that to get to tonight. Jeff, what's going on, man?
I'm ready for a little Thursday night football. Yeah. I will be honest with you, though. I probably will turn the volume down.
That's all the broadcast is going to be about tonight, right?
I get it. I mean, I understand why it's being talked about. I think it's an absolute travesty that Ray Rice was able to do what he did and to not have, you know, the proper punishment fit what is, to me, a crime, and not only from the National Football League, but also from law enforcement, that something wasn't pursued and that the NFL didn't come down harder initially or at least wait to find out all the facts before they just issued a two-game suspension, which now, you know, Commissioner Goodell is, you know, kind of, I guess, right in the crosshair, so to speak, of a lot of people that are being critical about the situation. But I just want my football. You know what I mean? I want to watch a football game, and I don't want to hear about Ray Rice. If I want to hear about all the Ray Rice stuff, I'll watch the news, okay? And when I turn the football game on Thursday night at 8:30, which, by the way, it's on CBS this year, which is different.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to hear that. So literally, I will turn the volume off on my television set and just watch a football game.
What do you say, Tony? Since all this is, we talked about a little bit on Monday, but it's blown up a little bit since then.
Jeff said it's right. I mean, what he did was awful. And I get how everyone's going after the commissioner and what they know and what they didn't know and everything else. And why did, you know, if they knew that, why only two games? What did the Ravens know? I mean, Ozzie Newsome coming out saying Ray Rice told us the truth. Well, if that's the case, then why'd you wait to cut him until the video came out? But I guess the bigger head-scratcher to me is the police saw it from the start. You got a man uppercutting, knocking out his wife in a very cavalier way and not showing much remorse, and he gets a pretrial diversion, and in 6 months, if he keeps his nose clean, it's gone forever.
I think that's pretty standard.
Really? I mean, which is shocking to me.
I think it is, and I agree
with
you.
That's shocking to me. I mean, if it's standard, I don't know if he got special privilege or not. And domestic abuse and violence is awful. And I think it's an eye-opener. I think it's an eye-opener for the league. I mean, because it's an issue that I think has been maybe swept under the rug a little bit from the league standpoint when guys have those issues. You got Greg Hardy, who was literally found guilty of threatening to kill his, I don't know if it's his wife, girlfriend
at the time.
Whatever it was, she is.
Ex-girlfriend now.
Yeah, and because he's appealing it, he's playing. And I get due process and everything, but the league needs to come out and set some standards from the standpoint of not only what the punishment is, but how are they going to handle it? Are they going to let due process go and then?
Well, you have to.
I agree with that, but my point is they've been inconsistent at that. Sometimes they come out and I'm not just talking domestic violence. I'm talking about all issues. Immediately you're suspended and the book is thrown at you. Sometimes they wait. And so I don't know why the league just doesn't come out and say, listen, here's our policy on all legal matters outside of the game of football. We let the criminal justice system due process take its course, and once the criminal process takes its course, we will then weigh in on the punishment. But jumping in here and waiting here, the inconsistency makes no sense to me. I mean, so I'm, for me, let a guy or a gal have their day in court, Let them go through the system. What's the rush? And if it comes out that they are guilty of whatever, in this case, domestic abuse, well, then you weigh in at that point if you're the commissioner. And you wait till you get all the facts. Collect all the facts. What's the rush?
There are plenty of owners around the National Football League issuing statements, and today Jaguars owner Shad Khan issued a statement via Jaguars.com. I won't read the whole thing. If you want to go there, you can read the whole thing, but just a few notes from it. This is a quote from Shad Khan. "The emotions we've all experienced from this are high and lasting, and the scrutiny and criticism at times has been understandable, but I have always had great faith in Commissioner Goodell. I applaud his decision to have the matter investigated by an independent party, and I know the process will be seen through objectively and with great integrity. As a league, we want and will accept nothing less, and I am sure Commissioner Goodell feels the same." And, of course, the full statement will be there on Jaguars.com. It's there right now if you want to view that.
Let me just make a comment on Commissioner Goodell. Look, you know, a lot of people want to kind of put him on this pedestal and then try to knock him off. He's done great things for the game of football, whether it be the National Football League or Little League football or whatever. And a lot of people are treating him like he's this arrogant, pompous, rich guy that doesn't care about the league and care about what happened. I can't, you know, and I know him personally, I can't imagine Roger ever turning a blind eye to what we all have seen in that video and coming away from that saying, okay, two games will work. I don't see that happening.
Well, not I'll even go a step further. I don't see him lying about it after the fact.
No.
He's too smart. And he understands what is at stake. Now, I like Roger, but I'll be critical of how the whole thing was handled. I think it was rushed. I think they should have taken their time.
Sure.
Obviously, something – I mean, the poor girl was drug out of the elevator unconscious. What did we think happened in there? And so why not let the thing play out? Why not get the video when it becomes public? Because everyone knew it was going to be public sooner or later. And let this thing take its due course and then make a decision, which they ultimately did afterwards. So I think he wishes he handled it differently. The only way, if it comes out in this independent investigation that he lied about it, well, then he's going to be fired. But I don't think that's going to come out. I don't think that's the case. I don't think Roger Goodell would do that.
We will find out in the coming days and weeks with that investigation. The former FBI head is leading that. And, of course, we'll keep you posted on anything that happens here on Jaguars Thursday.
Let's talk about football.
Let's talk about football. The latest injury report for the Jags is out. Toby Gerhart was back at practice but limited today. Mercedes Lewis limited yesterday, full. Dwayne Grotz limited yesterday, full with an ankle issue. Marquise Lee had a hamstring issue, scared the bejeebers out of everybody. He was back full today, too. So that's a few guys back on the field today, which is pretty good news. I tell you what, that Marquise Lee news yesterday just – was like, oh boy, another one, another wide receiver.
No, there's no doubt.
Right.
And with situation with Cecil, all of a sudden you might end up having to look to elevate a guy from the practice squad just to be able to suit up enough wide receivers for a game.
Yeah, Cecil did not practice today. That's right.
And Kerry Taylor's on the practice squad, so if you need a guy, I mean, he will obviously be the first one that you go to. But yeah, it's a little concerning. But you know what? I've kind of gotten to the point now where I don't pay attention to the Wednesday and Thursday and Friday injury reports. The Friday ones I do because they actually give you a designation.
Oh, yeah.
To whether you're probable, questionable, doubtful, or out. And at that point, then I pay attention because with a lot of teams, and this team is no different, Mercedes Lewis, you know, gets a day off from practice. He goes on the injury report because he didn't practice. Well, it might be just a guy who's a veteran guy who has ailments and because he's been playing football for so long, but it's not something that's going to keep him out of the game. So I don't pay much attention to Wednesday and Thursday. But now Friday, when it comes out, I pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, Marquise Lee is a perfect example. They said, you know, yesterday was a hamstring.
That's
well,
right.
Today went full.
Yes.
Well, guess what? If it was a serious hamstring issue, then you're not going full today. Maybe his legs were tight. Maybe it was – who knows what it could be. But the league is so stringent on reporting everything, so teams report everything now.
And that's all due to, I guess, the betting, you know, thing. They want to make sure that there's, you know, clear and – information that's available out there, so there's not any kind of inside information. As far as I know, that's the only reason that it's done. You know, maybe I'm crazy for thinking that. Maybe I'm
maybe
wrong.
A competitive advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's only
that might be it. Yeah. Not the betting. That would make more sense. Jonathan Cyprian out again still, of course, with the in the concussion program. Now, what happens if he doesn't, if he's not able to go?
I'd be surprised if he plays. You're talking about a guy who was out cold on the field for a little while.
Yeah.
And just like we said during the broadcast, would be shocked if he's allowed to come back into the game because of the NFL concussions protocol. No doctor is going to want to put himself at risk for letting a player go back on the field after being unconscious, and everybody can see that. And I think that the league and the doctors are going to be very cautious in this situation. And when he passes the test, and that's like a league standardized type of test,
then he'll be cleared.
Then he'll be ready to go.
If he doesn't pass the test, he's not playing. I think it's as easy as that.
It was nice to see him the last couple of days, though, actually walking out on the practice field, though he wasn't participating, of course. He's out.
Well,
and
to me, that's a good sign. Because if it doesn't mean that he's going to play, but it's a
true.
Good sign because when guys who, in my experience in the past, when guys have had serious head issues,
they don't go in the sun.
They basically put them in a dark room and they don't even tell them to come to the facility. Stay home, stay off your feet, keep the shades, blinds closed, wear sunglasses if you have to go out anywhere because of the light sensitivity.
Yeah, listen, I think tomorrow, if Cyprian's going to play, he'll practice tomorrow. I mean, at the end
he would
of the
have
day,
to.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think he'll. If he does nothing tomorrow, then I would assume he's out.
And I think Gus had said that Friday is kind of the next step in the concussion protocol. So if he's cleared to practice on Friday, and he practices,
and there's no issues,
then he's going to play.
He's going to play.
We'll find out. You know, and what happens? You know, it seemed like things happened after Cyprian left the game.
They did.
You know,
and not what you would expect to happen. You
sure.
know, because you got Josh Evans, who was the first guy in. And Josh Evans, if you were going to evaluate him as a player, you'd say, okay, solid, dependable, good tackler, right? And then Chris Przinski, the other guy who was going to take some reps more on passing downs because he's got a little bit more range than Josh Evans, you would say, okay, Chris Przinski, range, speed, not a great tackler.
But Gus had said earlier he's getting better at the tackling.
Well, he got better at the tackling because he made a play, I think, for a minus yards play on a run fit.
Right. And Josh struggled.
And then Josh struggled, so that was the opposite right. kind of opinion which you would have on those guys. And then Przinski bites up on the Macklin touchdown, which we're going to show on Film Room Friday tomorrow on Jaguars.com, which, you know, when you're a deep third safety, you never stick your nose up in there to try to make a play inside of 10 yards. You are happy making a tackle at 20 yards because your responsibility, your job, is to defend the deep part of the field. And he stuck his nose in there. That was an absolute rookie mistake.
For a fourth-year player.
Yeah.
Right. He's no rookie, that's for sure. Of course, with Robert Griffin III, he still has the wheels to move around if needed. They want him to be a pocket passer.
Yeah, you know what?
Said it this week. He has the arm to get you over the top.
He's got a golden arm. There is no doubt that he can throw it. He throws maybe just as good as anybody in the National Football League when he's got the time and his feet are in place. But the problem with him is, and I don't know if you saw this, Tony. I'm sure you did. His eyes are looking.
He has no idea where he's going with the ball.
First of all, he doesn't read exceptionally well, but that's to be expected because the first couple years of his NFL career, they didn't ask him to do that. So, I mean, he's in a little bit of a transition with the Redskins. But I see him peeking at the rush, and understandably so in week one with J.J. Watt up front. But he was peeking at times, and his eyes were dropping. And I think one of the players in the preseason that they played against had made the comments about RG3 peeking down at the rush. And I see it as well.
He has no presence in the pocket. And the rush was good against Houston, but he could have helped. I mean, just step up a little bit. And a couple of those guys are running him by. He just sat back there and started looking around and panicked.
You see, when you watch Blake Bortles in the pocket,
uh-huh.
he'll move a foot to his left or a foot and a half
and
to his right.
He climbs up
in the pocket a foot and a half, 2 feet to buy extra time. RG3 is either I'm going to throw it from right where my back foot hits the back step of my drop, or if it doesn't work, I'm running out of the pocket.
The wrong way, too.
Somewhere to buy time. He does not stay in the pocket and buy time.
Yeah, it was eye-opening as I watched the first game. I mean, he struggled.
It's one of they hit him 14 times in that game.
Yeah, some of them were self-inflicted.
He's so dramatic.
Yeah.
I mean, he is.
Some of them are self-inflicted, by the way, too. Not all of them.
He just runs into it.
But he's so dramatic.
He just doesn't move. He just, yeah. I mean, look at the rush. I mean, The funny thing is when you start looking at the rush, you actually get hit more.
I'm not an RG3 fan. I mean,
it sounds like
every time he gets hit, it's like it's he wants everybody to hold their breath and go, oh no, is he going to get up? Okay, just get up, pick yourself off the ground, and go back to the huddle, go to the next play. And then the other things I don't like about him is I remember after the game, the Houston game, he started talking about Michael Jordan, and when Michael Jordan misses a jumper, he just keeps on shooting. So he's trying to compare himself to Michael Jordan.
I didn't see that out there, by the way.
I did.
No, I didn't see I didn't see Michael Jordan out there.
Neither did I. So don't talk about yourself in the same sentence in comparison to one of the greatest athletes that ever played a sport. And second of all, don't be so sensitive. I mean, he's like overly sensitive, and I understand why the Redskins, the player vote, did not vote him a team captain.
Who is the captain, by the way?
Trent Williams, left tackle.
How about that?
Good player.
Interesting. Hey, you know what? Brian Sexton brought up a great note the other day when the notes came out, the game notes, the weekly media notes. There's no page for Robert Griffin III. There's usually like a feature page on big players that breaks down career. No, sir. Nope. Not for RG3.
Didn't do much last year.
Yeah.
No, so. And maybe that's the organization's way of saying you got to earn it. But according to him, him and Michael Jordan just keep shooting jumpers.
This is Jaguars Thursday. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jaguars offense. What can they do better this week against the Washington Redskins? Join the Jags. Celebrate the 20th season. Participate in the Jags Throwback Thursdays. Every Thursday leading up to the home opener, I guess, is the last one. Share your pictures in Jags throwback gear with hashtag JagsTBT. The best picks will be shown on the Everbank Field video boards, and four winners will get a chance for pregame field access during the Colts game. When we come back, more Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Jaguars Thursday continues. Come protect the bank. The Jags face Andrew Luck and the division rival Indianapolis Colts September 21st. Be here for the home opener. Let's see what everybody's been talking about. The world's largest video boards. Tickets going fast. Jaguars.com/tickets or call 904-633-2000. JP Shadrick, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Lagerman. This portion of Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Fanatics.com. Offense for the Jaguars, guys. Of course, you know, sudden change opportunities last week. They took advantage of those early. But
yeah, but the rest of it's all Chad Henne's fault.
You listen to Twitter and the fans. That's what everybody thinks.
I've been going to war. Did you listen to the show? Did you listen to the show?
No,
Monday
I had
night?
TV show Monday.
Tony
night.
Got or, absolutely
no Monday night. I did not listen. Usually I'm doing TV, yeah. But I wasn't, so I was doing something.
He got hammered.
I went
Twitter.
After him. I said this is because I made the comment. Chad Henne played a good game.
Played okay.
No, he played good. I mean, from what I watched and talking to people, he played a good game. Was it great? No, but he played good. Bunch of drops. A bunch of opportunities that were out there that we're not taking advantage of.
No doubt.
And the funny thing is the big plays early, I didn't think Chad threw the ball great.
Right.
There were nice catches by
plays were made.
But as the game went on, he was throwing the ball better, and the balls were being dropped. So go figure.
You remember what I said at the beginning of the game? And I said that, you know, as a veteran guy, young offensive line, rookie wide receivers, you expect him to go to Mercedes early and often. And at a critical juncture in the game, fourth and one backed up, down by seven, they go to Mercedes, and play doesn't get made. The back shoulder throw to Mercedes. Yep. Mercedes doesn't make it. Mercedes had another one on a diving opportunity. Would have been an unbelievable catch.
Yeah, that would have been a great catch. But the other two should have been
made.
The other
two should have been made. You know,
we argued about that.
But I mean, we argued about it, but on the fourth and one, we argued. Tony said, you know, the play should have been made, and my point was that the throw could have been better by Chad Henne. It could have been.
It was over the defender coming in.
I'll just say this. That's what they were expecting all week, that he was going to be a high ball. That's why they threw it to Mercedes instead of Will Tufo, because they knew that guy was going to be coming free and that Chad would have to lob it over.
Barwin, wasn't it, coming in?
Connor Barwin.
Yeah, that's right.
And so could have been a little bit lower, yeah, but too much lower, that ball's getting tipped. Listen, we can nitpick, and there's plays in every game that you can go back after the fact and say, should have done this, should have done that. The bottom line is there were opportunities in the second half, and there were opportunities in the first half that they didn't convert the ball to Marquise Lee.
Yeah, which I don't think was a very good throw, and I don't think it was a very good route either.
If he runs through, first of all, it was cut short, and he stops. If you watch the tape, he actually hesitates and then goes again. If he runs through it, it's a first down. And so there's just little things like that. And I'm not saying Chad played perfect or blaming anything on anyone. It's the very thing Jeff and I talked about during the broadcast and before. When you have young players, you're going to have things that aren't perfect. There's going to be mistakes made, and you got to overcome them.
But here's the difference. You've got a third overall draft pick quarterback who is the backup who had a marvelous preseason.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's human nature, and I get it.
I get it, but it's just I got frustrated, and I continue to fight people on Twitter because it's like, listen, it's almost like this mob mentality, like Chad is the reason they lost the game, and that's not accurate at all.
No, there's plenty of
plenty of blame
faces
on both
looking
sides.
In the mirror.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness. And
2 for 14 on third down is not just Chad Henning.
No. Bad tracks by backs at times.
They had some third and shorts too, right? I mean, they had what, third and short a few times
early in the game.
The
conversions were not good.
Yeah. Right. If you have any kind of run game going, you think you might pick some of those up, right? Get a yard.
And there's little things that, and the good news is, it's a young team, and if you watch the tape, the mistakes are very correctable.
Yeah,
very correctable.
Yeah, some of them are correctable, and some of them you look at and you go, you just need a little seasoning.
That's my point. It's just experience.
For the youth and inexperience, you know, give them some time to work it out. And that's why I had a call when I was doing Mike Dempsey's show on Tuesday. And they're like, you know, caller said, you know, your expectations aren't very high, you know, because you're not critical of the team. I'm like, well, wait a minute. He got 14 starts on the offensive line. Not, you know, as I said, it's for the game about Zane Beadles taking him out of the equation. 14 starts along the offensive line playing the exact same position they were lining up at. You've got two rookie wide receivers. You've got a running back who's never been a starter before. And so really the only proven components of that team or guys that had experience were Zane Beadles, Chad Henney, and Will Tofoe, the fullback.
And
Mercedes Lewis, the tight end. So you got four guys
out of 11
with at least one season of experience, and everybody else didn't even have a season, some of them not even a couple games. Come on.
It's funny, like the expectations change all of a sudden. After 4 weeks of preseason, the team's playing well on offense.
The expectations change when they were up by 17.
Exactly. That, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden it's going to be a 10-win team this year. They're going to go to the playoffs. Well, this is a growing team.
Work in progress on offense.
Growing pains happen.
Work in progress on offense, and I think that's why, you know, on defense they went out and were as aggressive as they were in free agency, because they knew that they were going to have a defense that carried this football team for a little while, because they were committed to youth and inexperience on offense. That's the way it's going to be. I mean, and so you want them to be trending upwards as the season goes on offensively, and I expect them to do that.
Offensive line, what can they do this week against Washington? That's another 3-4 look.
Yeah, it's 3-4 look. And let me say this about last week, and just a quick comment, then we'll go to Washington. I thought the offensive line, protection-wise, was, for most of the game, did a good job. There was time back there. Now, there were some breakdowns late that were critical, but, you know, so that was a good, something they could build on. I thought Luke Jokel had the best game he had played, including any of the preseason games.
Or even right tackle starts last year.
Yeah, I thought he did.
Played solid game.
I thought he played a very solid
game. Against a very good player.
Yeah, and something that he can build on. And so going into this week, it's a 3-4 again. I think the down guys are Jason Hatcher, who's going to line up over Luke, is a very good player. Big, long, 6'6", 300-pound guy. I think all their down guys are they're big human beings who are physical. They move well. I thought they did you watch them against Houston. They do a good job of getting off blocks, moving around, trying not to stay blocked. And they have two outside guys in Brian Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan. Ryan Kerrigan is a good player, a super effort guy. He's good talent with off-the-charts effort, and so that makes him a very good player. And Brian Arakpo, he's not the same guy to me as I've seen in the past. He's battled injuries the last couple years, and he doesn't have the same pop, but he still can really embarrass you if you're not ready to play. He's still a good player. So I like those front five, you know, with the two outside backers, three down guys. I'm probably a little more lukewarm on the inside backers than Jeff is. I think 52 Keenan Robinson's a little stiff. He runs straight ahead. I don't know how great he's side to side. Perry Riley's an undersized guy at 6 foot. that I think you can cover up and get on. He's very athletic, and so if you don't get a body on him, he's gonna make plays. Mm-hmm. But overall, you watch him against Houston. Houston had some success. Arian Foster rushed for over 100 yards. Very similar scheme.
He's running like he used to.
Exactly. A similar scheme with the Jags. We're going to try to do a lot of outside stretch, some inside zone. That's their base play. Ironically, it's what the Redskins are going to do as well. And they had success, over 100 yards. But it's a solid defense. It's going to blitz. Hazlitt's aggressive. They're going to bring they're going to go a lot of zone dogs. They're going to drop one and bring four weak to one side and try to bring an extra guy that you can block if you slide the wrong way with the backs in the center. So it'll be a good challenge for Chad Henne to get everyone lined up and going the right way.
Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli, talking Jaguars and Redskins coming up Sunday. When was the last time these two teams played? In a few years, right? It's been 2010, maybe? 2011?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
I'll say this. I think the last time they played, Mark Brunell was the quarterback for the Redskins.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, it has been a little while. Very rare these two teams get together.
I think it was.
Every 4 years.
Yeah, certainly that was at FedEx Field.
At FedEx.
Yeah. And the reason I remember, the thing stands out most in that game was when we pulled into the parking lot, it was because we were there a few years prior to that. And I remember the sponsorship that they had all over the stadium the first time we went there at the new stadium. And then the last time we were there, the economy's down a little bit, and our sponsorship wasn't quite as big. And then I remember being stuck in the corner
of the stadium to try
to call a game on radio.
You're like behind the end line.
Yeah, it's not a great booth.
It's very difficult. Very difficult to call a game.
Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Park at one of six conveniently located lots and ride to the game with fellow fans in JTA's climate-controlled shuttles. Stadium shuttle service operates 2 hours before games and has continual service during games at the convention center lot only. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Visit Jaguars.com and check out Inside the Jaguars for the latest Jags news. Sexton Spotlight on there today, too. Leroy Reynolds visiting with Brian earlier. And plenty of daily content from senior writer John Osier as well. This is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to the phone lines. Tim, out at the beaches, wants to talk about Chad Henne. Tim, what's up?
Hey, guys. First of all, I agree with Tony that I thought Chad Henne played well. I think, you know, there was a lot of positives that came out of the game to give fans something to look for this season. But the one thing that frustrated me was the problems getting, I don't know if it was getting the call in time or Henne getting it to the line of scrimmage in time, but we blew all three timeouts in the second half early, and at the end of the game when those timeouts might have come in handy when we're trying to come back, we didn't have them, which I think was maybe one of the things that led to them going for it on fourth down. Was that a Henne problem or was that a coaching problem, and what are they doing to address it?
That's a youth and inexperience problem. I mean, Chad Henne can break the huddle and line everybody up, but he can't do it himself. I mean, he can't be in their bodies. I mean, that's exactly kind of what you expected to see with a very young offense and two rookie wide receivers. I mean, sometimes getting lined up. You know, when they come out of the preseason, a lot of these young players think that they've seen a game plan. They have not seen a game plan yet because there's so many adjustments. The playbook expanded probably by fourfold from a preseason game, you know, to a regular season game, you know, so chalk it up for the youth and inexperience and that it will be better this week.
And Jed Fish actually said this during his press conference this week, that there was a time or two where the formation got in a little late, they changed personnel or something, and then the play got in a little late and they were at the line with about 14, 15 seconds and there was motion on a play, so they knew they weren't going to get the snap off.
Right.
So there's situations like that. Things happen in a game sometimes. And
yeah, but it did dictate what they did late.
I agree with that.
They go for fourth down, fourth and one if they have three timeouts.
Well, I think they do.
Even if they have three timeouts.
I think they probably could have done it even in that situation. But, you know, maybe not.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Mike in Ponte Vedra. Looks like you want to talk about Ziggy Hood, Mike. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
first-time caller. I just wanted to find out a couple things. Is Ziggy Hood living up to that contract that the Jaguars give him? And as far as Ray Rice is concerned, no one's mentioning the fact that he married her a couple days or a week or two after that incident. Was it really love, or was it just to keep her quiet?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if anybody will ever know the answer to that. And to be honest with you, it doesn't matter between them.
Yeah, that's their business.
It doesn't matter.
Concern me. So
Ziggy Hood, how's he performed?
Well, I mean, and the question was, is he worth the money that the Jaguars are paying him?
It's been one game.
One game so far. You can't make that judgment yet. Now, can you say, okay, as an analyst, you know, watching Ziggy Hood in preseason and in practice and in one preseason game, which is still your evaluation table is very small. But if I had to say one way or the other, I'd say, no, he's not worth $4 million a year, whatever it was, $4 or $5 million a year, whatever they paid him. But I'm not ready to say that, you know, to write that down and sign my name on it because it's only one game. But he does provide consistent play and depth when he is on the field. Now, is he at the same level of Cedric Marks? No. Absolutely not.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a drop-off. I'm not going to say significant, but there is definitely a noticeable drop-off when Roy Miller and Cedric Marks aren't in the game and Avery Jones and Ziggy Hood come in and give them blows. You got to do it because you can't play. They played 82 snaps as a defense.
But Avery, I thought, had some real quality snaps in the ballgame.
Absolutely. I'm not
less drop-off from Roy to
Avery.
Avery than I think to Cedric to Ziggy. But I think a lot of that has to do with Cedric is playing his rear end off. I mean, he's playing very well.
Yeah, I think both him and Roy are playing very well right now.
And I thought Roy was good. I didn't think in certain plays Roy was dominant. And then there was a couple plays where Roy started running sideways and getting his shoulders turned, where when you do that, you lose a lot of your power as a defensive lineman. So I thought he got a little bit careless on a couple plays, but overall pretty good.
I used to love when you guys turned your shoulders.
A defensive lineman turns his shoulders and starts running,
it's over.
Forget it.
It's like, here we go.
Yeah.
Time to take a ride.
And what Tony's talking about, and me and Tony actually had this discussion, and we'll talk about it on the radio show. When the Jaguars run the outside zone, you're always trying to press the outside shoulder on a front side block. And your goal is to reach the guy and hook him to where the running back, can, as he starts his track outside, can continue on that track and just keep going. Well, when a defensive lineman turns his shoulders and starts running to stay into that gap.
To fight, to keep contained.
To stay into that gap and to stay outside, the Jaguars don't do something yet, and maybe it's youth and inexperience, that you'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I love the outside zone because you get them running. Number one, if you hook them, you hook them, and they're dead and they look like idiots. If they are a good player and they're fighting to get outside and you can't hook them, well, they're fighting so hard, if you're pressing that block the way you're supposed to, that naturally they have to start, not giving ground, but they're trying to get over the top of you. So all the momentum is going towards the sideline.
It's going lateral.
It's lateral. And so as an offensive tackle, at that point, all I would do is stop pressing my outside hand and flip them with my inside hand, press my inside hand, and take them as fast as I could, and they'd be on skates going backwards at this point.
So then they're in their hole, but they're gap.
About 15 yards.
But the gap is is 10 yards outside, and then so it creates a hole in effect by washing him past the point he's trying to maintain, and you don't see the Jaguars' offensive line truly understanding that yet.
And it's why I think it's a great play, and it's why you see a lot of teams run it. You'll see the Redskins run it, and they run it well, is because it puts a lot of stress. If you get that down and you get that technique down, and it's all about the first two steps if you're an offensive lineman, because if that defensive lineman gets into you before you get those two steps down and get your hands on him, well, then you're going backwards, and you're going the wrong way, and they've won because they've bellied the whole play. But if you can get good at that, it puts so much stress on a defensive lineman because he almost can't be right. Because he has gap control, and he's trying to keep contained, and he's fighting you to keep contained. And if you get your feet in the ground and get on him, and now he's stretching, and now he's wrong again because you're pushing him wider.
Jim Lachey, remember he was a great left tackle for the Washington Redskins. They got him in a trade from Oakland, I want to say.
I can't remember.
I can't remember what team it was. But a really good player. and I was a young defensive end, and I remember he was doing a zone type play, and I'm fighting to stay in that gap. You know, I'd never played defensive line in my life. You know, so I'm fighting to stay in that gap. You're not going to get me out of that gap. You're not going to get me out of that gap. And I'm starting to turn and run. And, you know, and all of a sudden he did what Tony's talking about, where he just kind of flips you and then lets you start to go where you're trying to fight for. And then
now really, you're trying to stay off your back.
You were talking about getting thrown out of the bar. Jim Lachey threw me from the left tackle position all the way over to the right tackle position. And I learned something that day. Keep your shoulders square. Fight for that gap, but don't overcommit to it. Otherwise, Jim Lachey is going to make you look like a moron.
Yeah. It's a great block. Now, the flip side of his good defensive linemen, what they do is they get your hands on you, and they beat you the hands, and they start pressing you backwards. And it's happened to me. Flip side is you're trying to get there so hard, and they get their hands on you. Next thing you know, you're going, uh-oh, we're going the wrong way here, boys.
I'll never forget that play. I mean, he did that to me, and then also it was the same day he was doing a block. You remember the counter plays where you
– Yeah, counter tray.
Well, it was a counter to where the offensive line – and, you know, the veteran guys were really kind of, I guess you could say, sneaky, crafty at this. He would step to his inside to get you
thinking
to want to close.
Thinking you're reaching him.
Thinking you're trying to reach a cut off. And then he would just literally flip you right away and wheel you all the way across the line of scrimmage and make you look like a fool. So I got a great education by Jim Lachey.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a day. Yeah, well yeah. Done.
It wasn't that I was a great player, Joe Fortunato. I got a great education on that day. Inside joke there.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Royce on the north side wants to talk D. What's up, Royce?
Hey, how are you tonight? I really enjoyed the show. My question is, opponents' tight ends seem to get open on the Jaguars a lot. Why is that?
Well, if you're referring to specifically this past game,
they're pretty good at it, the Eagles.
There's a guy by the name of LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles that make linebackers honor the running game.
Especially LeSean McCoy.
In a huge way. And the Eagles, and I said this part of the game, it's the most stressful game a linebacker will play in the National Football League, bar none. Because they're so good at the running game, they have one of the best backs, if not the best back in the National Football League. And when Nick Foles sticks the ball out into the stomach of LeSean McCoy,
you gotta honor it.
As a linebacker, you got to start to step up to honor that. And then all of a sudden, he pulls that ball back out of the stomach of LeSean McCoy, and there's Selleck or Zach Ertz sneaking in behind you. That's hard. That's a very hard play to defend if you're a linebacker.
Yeah, and what they need to do is a better job of getting the defensive lineman or whoever's on the tight end try to get a jam, at least slow him down a little bit. Because if that guy gets a free release with that play-action pass – The linebackers in no man's land.
And sometimes you can't get that, but like on first and 10, it's a difficult play no matter what.
That's right.
On second and 3, it's an even harder play.
Yeah.
But now on second and 9, maybe you're a little slower to commit to the run, and it becomes easier.
And so it's really 3. It's trying to get some sort of jam off the line of scrimmage to slow them down. 2 is the linebackers have to fight. As soon as they see it, they're going to step up. Of trying to get as much depth and getting that passing lane. And the safeties have to do a good job of recognizing it and those deep safeties cheating over and trying to get down there and cover it up. I mean, it's a very difficult play.
Yeah, but I don't want anybody to think that that's a trend against
the
Jaguars.
No.
That, okay. Last week against the Eagles, that's just a difficult play.
If you watch the Eagles this year, you'll see a lot of tight ends catching balls. They did it last year.
It's a nice fantasy pickup if you're looking for
if you're a fantasy guy, and I'm not a fantasy guy, I would – pick Zach Ertz first and Selleck would be number 2. I mean, prior to the game, you look at the big plays that they had, you know, receptions of 20 plus yards. And last year, the tight ends for the Philadelphia Eagles had 20. I mean, 20 from a single position.
It's
I mean, that's insane.
Well, let's compare it to this week then. They don't run that read option anymore in Washington, right? It's more of
not.
A. So you don't have to honor it like.
They ran it one time.
They might want to get back
against
to
Houston.
But Morris
because the drop back pass isn't working.
Right, but Morris is not the home run threat, I guess, that McCoy is.
He's a different back. So
no, but he's a hell of a back.
So here's the difference: LeSean McCoy has the ability to make about 8 guys miss on any play, and he's not a downhill runner. He's going to press the hole, but reminds you like Fred Taylor. He's going to make you. He's going to jump
Fred
around.
Fred Taylor, Barry Sanders,
yeah, make you miss. This guy, Alfred Morris, he is downhill one cut. And he is
Kind of like Emmitt Smith.
He's going to get his shoulder square, and he is going.
And run with power.
And he's going to deliver a blow.
And to finish this conversation, Jordan Reed, hamstring injury, has not practiced this week, likely won't play tight end for the Redskins. So
that's not a big loss for them.
Yeah, Niles Baldwin, I mean, he's the one who got deep. Yep. Now he fumbled it, but he's the one who got behind the Swearinger, the safety.
If he doesn't play, I don't think that's that big of a deal.
No.
All right.
I agree.
There you go. So it's a one-week thing. Tight ends running wild over the Jags.
Let's hope so.
Well, you hope so. You know, and when you get a little bit, more stable as far as not having a hurry-up offense where you can match up, on defense and play your base package and then play your nickel package without having that hurry-up tempo, it kind of calms down a little bit.
Jaguars Thursday, go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. When we come back, we'll look at tonight's game. Thursday night football gets going tonight. And guess who? The Baltimore Ravens play the Pittsburgh Steelers tonight. We'll look at some games this weekend as well. We'll wrap up Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida, the official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Final segment of Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Vaselli. One final phone call tonight. President of the Bold City Brigade, John Caputo, is on the line. How are you, Cap?
What's going on, fellas?
What's happening, John?
Big trip for you guys, the Bold City Brigade, going to Washington, D.C. How many do you have going this week?
Yeah, buddy, thanks for letting me call in and plug it a little bit. We've got about 225 sitting together inside the stadium. All told, we're going to have a tailgate of probably over 300 people.
Nice. That's incredible. How about that?
And the best part, John, is that it's going to be an absolutely gorgeous early fall day up there in Maryland.
Well, thanks, Logs, for ordering that weather for us, man. We appreciate that.
Now, what does the tailgate include this week, Cap?
We sold tickets kind of ahead of time as part of packages for the trip, but we're going to open up some day of the people that got the tickets. It's all inclusive, beverages and food, everything. You just have to show up, and we're taking care of the rest. We've got a 15-passenger van that's leaving in the morning to go up to D.C. with all our supplies. But I want to make sure, I know there's a lot of other people that are taking the trip, and we want to welcome all of them to the tailgate. You might have to bring some of your own beverages, but we're not sure if we're going to be able to sell any kind of tickets to it day of. But we will be in the bus lot, the official Redskins bus lot. You won't be able to miss us, 300-plus Jaguars fans. I think you'll be able to see us and hear us. So, and especially Saqib, man. Listen, this guy's a legend, and we need him to stop by the Bold City Brigade tailgate. So we can finally meet this guy.
Zakeev's a normal caller in the post game, right? The same guy.
I know. Exactly. He's a radio legend over here, and we want to put a face to the name. So Saqib, I know you're listening. Bring yourself to the bus lot, and the first beer's on me, man.
I'm looking at the weather right now, John. Overnight lows Saturday night about 58 degrees, and then daytime kickoff highs that day about 75. I mean, perfect.
It's perfect.
Wow.
Sounds horrible.
Really? Hey, quickly, what section will you guys be in?
What
yard line?
Seats in section 446, 447, and 448. That's so if anybody's on the fence and isn't going yet, there's still some tickets in those sections available on StubHub. Come on, make the call quick and join us up there. Saturday night, too, guys, real quick, I'm sorry, we're having a big party. It's actually in Arlington, so if anybody's going up there, again, not with us, but wants to hang out, we've reserved an entire bar for Saturday night. It's at Whitlow's on Wilson, and they can check everything out on our Facebook. Again, I appreciate you guys letting me plug it.
Yeah, boldcitybrigade.com will have the info and the Facebook page as well. Cap, we appreciate the call, man. Have a great one. Pull him through, will you?
Hey, we're trying. We'll do our best. Thanks, boys.
There he is, John Caputo, president of Bold City Brigade. Great. Over 200 going. That's awesome.
I wish I could tailgate with him for a while.
No doubt. You can skip the pregame.
You got to do the game, bud.
Make the radio call real interesting.
I'm not going to let you go over there.
Let's start with some games this week and tonight. Of course, we look around the National Football League, and of all the stories this week about the Baltimore Ravens, the Ravens play on Thursday Night Football at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Can the Ravens overcome this news around the building?
I don't think the Ravens are very good overall, and I think it's a lot of distraction, too much going on. I think the Steelers will win.
Yeah, you know, but it's amazing how sometimes
it can galvanize
a team. I mean, you know, look, I mean, the rest of the Ravens players weren't involved in the Ray Rice situation, and sometimes it can pull a team closer together. And I don't expect the Ravens to play as poorly as they did last week, and I don't expect Ben Roethlisberger to play as well as he did last week. So I think it's going to be a real close ball game, as most division games are.
The game at 8:25 tonight. CBS, remember, has the Thursday night games this year and NFL Network. The Dolphins had a big win against New England last week.
Who saw that one?
I don't know. The Buffalo Bills will host them this week. They've been sold this week as well. Dolphins or Bills?
Yeah, I'm not buying the EJ Manuel, you know, train yet. The one thing that I did find interesting this past week was that I think that Sammy Watkins had three catches for like 30 yards.
They rushed for 200 yards against Chicago.
Yeah, and they ran the ball extremely well. So I think the Buffalo Bills get beat. I think the Miami Dolphins are a better football team than most think, because people are still kind of caught up on what happened there with Rich Incognito. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking the Dolphins.
The Patriots, and boy, the poor Minnesota Vikings D have to play the Patriots after they lose week one. Good luck.
Well, wait a minute.
No?
Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
They won.
They played one heck of a football game this past week.
Okay.
Got a new head coach. They got some new energy. Still got arguably one of the best backs in the National Football League.
And tell me who outside for the Patriots, for the New England Patriots, is going to scare you. Wide receiver wise,
none. They do have Gronkowski back, but he's still not 100%.
Yeah, but take him away inside and take your chances outside. Listen, I think the Patriots. I'm not going to listen. I still think they're going to win the division, but I think Minnesota might. Castles playing quarterback, just don't mess it up and get AP going. You'll be all right.
The Saints lost a heartbreaker against the Falcons week one. They're going to Cleveland. Browns lost a close game, too.
Browns
two 0-1 teams, but two different 0-1 teams.
Yeah, the Saints, Saints are going to absolutely roll them.
Yeah, it'll be a wide margin as well.
Unless Johnny Manziel
plays. Could Johnny get in?
Who cares?
They actually came out, the offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan came out this week and said there are no packages for Johnny Football. But then again, last week, Mike Pettine, the head coach, said that, you know, we were going to look at some packages for Johnny. So,
Who knows? Whatever.
This should be a fantastic game in Cincinnati. The Bengals host the Atlanta Falcons.
It's a very good game. Both, listen, the Bengals are extremely talented. I was surprised the Falcons got the win last week against the Saints. Kudos to Mike Smith and his staff. It was a high-scoring affair, but I think the Bengals are – I know they're much better on defense than the Saints are. I think it's going to be a tough game for Atlanta to go in, especially coming off a big emotional win in the division. I like the Bengals.
Yeah, the strength of the Falcons are Julio Jones and Roddy White, clearly.
No doubt.
And the strength of the Bengals are their front four rushers and their defensive backfield.
They're a good team.
I think the Bengals win.
Let's finish with this one. Sunday night football, the Bears at the 49ers on a new field in Santa Clara. Now
the Bears' defense is awful. And, I mean, I wasn't impressed when I saw them in the preseason. The Bills ran right through them.
Jay Cutler is going to be throwing the ball a lot.
You bet he is.
Can they protect?
I mean, because they're going to have to score points, because the 49ers are going to roll.
Yeah, the 49ers, they're going to score. They're going to run the ball. Home opener. New stadium, I don't think the Bears are going to win that one.
49ers.
And then Eagles-Colts on Monday night.
That's a good football game.
You bet it is.
It's a good football game, and a real tough week for the Indianapolis Colts with Robert Mathis tearing an Achilles.
He's done.
You take him off of that defense as they play without him the first week, they're not very good.
Below average.
Yep.
Jeff, Tony, well done. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up for the Jags on field work tomorrow, travel to Washington Saturday. 1 o'clock kick. We're on air at 10 o'clock on Sunday with the Publix tailgate show. For everyone involved tonight, this is JP Shadrick. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.